I'm sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl.
The show you're about to hear was recorded on May 7th, 2019, with activist Kevin Cease, who is currently holed up inside the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C., along with many others, trying to fend off a takeover of the embassy by backers of Juan Guaido, the self-proclaimed and U.S.-backed, but not leader of Venezuela. So welcome to the show, Kevin Cease.
Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate you calling.
Could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Kevin Cease. I'm the co-director of Popular Resistance, and we're part of the Embassy Protection Collective.
Yeah, so tell me, what is the Embassy Protection Collective, and why are you in the Venezuelan Embassy in Washington, D.C.?
Well, the Embassy Protection Collective began on April 10th, and it began because the coup effort in Venezuela had failed, and they were working to try to excite it here by taking Venezuelan property, the military attaché in Washington, D.C., and three diplomatic offices in New York were taken. On April 9th, the United States convinced the OAS to amend its rules, to essentially ignore its rules, in order to recognize Guaido. Traditionally, the rules require a two-thirds vote to recognize a new president. They changed the rules to a majority, and they barely got a majority. At that point, the ambassadors from Venezuela to the OAS, the Organization of American States, were required to leave by the U.S. State Department. They had 2 weeks to do so. So that would make this building, which is a four-story building with a basement and two levels of garages that housed 80 people. It's a large building in Georgetown, really the gold of the embassies for Venezuela. And because we had seen the previous acts, we knew we needed to protect it. So conversations with the foreign ministry resulted in them being open to the idea. We moved in and started to share the space with them until the OAS ambassadors left. And got to know the staff, where they got to know us, they became confident in us, and they allowed us to stay after they left. And so our basic purpose here is protect the embassy from a U.S. coup. That means the U.S. violating the Vienna Convention, coming into the embassy, and giving it over to the coup plotters they're working with who are trying to create regime change in Venezuela. And so our purpose is to serve as a protectorate, and we call it an interim protectorate because Venezuela and the U.S. both have embassies they have to protect. In Caracas, the U.S. embassy is vacant because diplomatic relations have been broken, and then the same kind of problem in Washington, D.C. with Venezuela. Both countries are seeking to have a protectorate power, another country, protect that embassy so it remains not invaded by any foreign government, by the host government. And so when that negotiation is complete, we hope the two countries will agree and we'll be happy to leave. But until that time, we're going to serve as a citizens' protectorate to make sure this embassy is not violated by the United States as part of their coup attempt.
Wow. Well, I really applaud you for being there and for doing that, because the U.S. has been trying to take over Venezuela for many years now.
That's right.
Yeah, under Chavez and now under Maduro. And wasn't Maduro elected by the people just last year? Didn't he win a fair election?
Yes, no question. I was in Venezuela for that election. And so there was actually an election. I saw it with my own eyes. They had almost a 50% turnout, lower than usual because the U.S. was pressuring the opposition to boycott it. The U.S. wanted to say it was an illegitimate election because they knew that they could not defeat Maduro in an election. But there were more than 150 international election observers, and they unanimously agreed that the election met the standards of democracy, international standards of democracy, that there was no fraud, and that Maduro won the election and is the legitimate president. Maduro is also recognized by the United Nations, and so it's absurd that the U.S. is not recognizing him, because there's no question he was democratically elected. In fact, he had a higher percentage of registered voters vote for him than President Trump did. He had a higher percentage of registered voters in Venezuela vote for him than President Obama did. So there's no question he won 67% of the vote that turned out, but even had a higher percentage of registered voters than either Trump or Obama. He was democratically elected. He's not a dictator. He is the legitimate president of Venezuela.
Okay, so no doubt about that. And why does the U.S. want to overthrow him and Chavez before him?
Well, the election of Hugo Chavez in 1998 and him taking power in 1999 was essentially a declaration of independence, where the Venezuelans said, we are an independent and sovereign nation. We are not going to be dominated by the United States any longer. So that was something that is an affront to the U.S., especially in Latin America, which the U.S. has always called its backyard, and it was kind of an obnoxious kind of term, where the Monroe Doctrine has given the U.S. the perception that it can be in charge of what occurs in Latin America. For Venezuela, a very large and powerful country, to say we are independent was an affront the U.S. could not stand. Making that worse was that Hugo Chavez changed the direction of the country. In the past, it had been a country that served the wealthy and provided profits to U.S. and British oil companies, because Venezuela has been one of the largest producers of oil since the 1920s. It has the largest oil reserves in the world, and those profits had been used to make the wealthy wealthier and provide profits to transnational corporations. Chavez changed that direction. He decided to uplift the poor. Before Chavez, poverty in Venezuela was at 75%. 75%. And Chavez grew up in poverty himself, and he had toured the country with a military officer and saw the extent of the poverty. And when he became president, that became his priority, was to end poverty and to end illiteracy. Then he began to build health services and community centers, and then him and Chavez and Maduro began to move toward building participatory democracy at the local level. So radical change in the direction of the country. I went to a barrio in Venezuela when I was there 6 weeks ago. It's a barrio where 1.5 million people live. Pre-Chavez, that community of 1.5 million was not even on the public maps because they got no public services. That barrio today has mass transit, it has schools, it has hospitals, health centers, dental services, community centers, urban gardening centers to provide food locally grown without any pesticides. So it's a dramatic change. The people of Venezuela do not want to go back to the pre-Chavez, but the United States wants control of the country. So the first thing is, how dare Venezuela claim its independence? The second thing is, Venezuela has tremendous natural resources, not just number one in the world on oil, number one on gold, number one reserves on diamonds. It has vast resources for minerals that are essential for electronics, minerals that are essential for military weapons. It has vast resources of fresh water, which is becoming a very precious resource in the world. So Venezuela has incredible natural wealth. The U.S. wants to put in place a puppet that makes sure the U.S. gets more than its share of that wealth. Our preference and what we advocate for is when they negotiate this mutual protectorate power agreement, that begins a process of negotiation where the U.S. recognizes it cannot put in place a regime change. They cannot successfully put in place a coup with a puppet government, and realizes that rather than having conflict with Venezuela, they should have a negotiated relationship with Venezuela. They can negotiate to buy oil and gas and gold and whatever other minerals they need, but they should recognize Venezuela as a sovereign nation, an independent sovereign nation, and should be negotiated with and treated with respect. That would be the direction we want to see things go.
Right, and it's also against international law to do what the U.S. is doing, but that doesn't seem to matter anymore, does it?
Yeah, that's the funny thing about this situation. We are here lawfully. We're basically tenants, and we are here with the permission of the Venezuelan government. We did not enter unlawfully. They gave us a key. We're not trespassing. But if the United States comes in, they will be violating international law. The Vienna Convention of 1961, which deals with diplomatic relations, requires that host countries protect foreign embassies. That means the U.S. should protect the Venezuelan embassy. The Vienna Convention says that embassies are inviolate. That means they cannot be violated. They cannot be entered without permission. The U.S. comes into this building. They will be violating the Vienna Convention. They will be entering unlawfully. They'll be the criminals. They'll be the ones acting illegally. We're acting lawfully. So it's a very strange situation, but that would be the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they're not doing that, it's not because of respect for international law, but because if the U.S. sets that precedent and violates the Vienna Convention, that puts U.S. embassies around the world at risk. Why should the Vienna Convention apply to U.S. embassies? And So I think the United States State Department realizes they had to be very careful here. And if they come to this embassy and violate international law, there could be blowback. That's very unpredictable and very costly to the United States.
Yeah, and have people tried to get into the embassy since you've been there? Have the Guaido supporters or the U.S. forces or whatever tried to get in?
Well, that's a really very interesting question because they cannot lawfully enter and remove us, what they've taken as an alternative approach is to allow violent coup supporters to surround the building and try to terrorize us out. They're trying to intimidate us. They are threateningly chanting at us. They're yelling at women that they're going to be raped. They're yelling at everyone that can be murdered. They've been allowed to commit assaults outside against our allies. When people are assaulted trying to bring food to the building, the people who are assaulted and knocked to the ground are arrested, not the people committing the assault. It's quite obvious that the Secret Service, which is the agency responsible for embassies, that they've been given orders to give free rein to these violent coup supporters. They have pounded on the doors to such an extent that the doors were shaking and it looked like the doors could break. We had our lawyers. We have a very strong law firm working with us, the Partnership for Civil Justice. They have written to the State Department and the Secret Service to criticize their failure to protect the embassy and to protect the people who live in the embassy. In addition, we've had scores of people, probably hundreds, maybe even thousands, but hundreds of people at least, calling the State Department, the Secret Service, and the White House to complain about the behavior that's being allowed. We have seen, since the worst of that, diminution that's been reduced, I think, because of that kind of public pressure. So they're still outside. They still shout at us. They still use bullhorns and noisemakers and noise cannons and strobe lights to try to blind us. They still try to create a situation of intimidation and fear, but it has had the opposite effect. We have united more strongly. We are in unity and solidarity in our decision to stay here and protect this embassy in sovereignty with the Venezuelan people and their elected government. So their attacks have actually failed.
How many people are there in the embassy now in your collective?
You know, there are some issues about where we stay in the embassy, how much food we have, how many people are here, that we've decided as a group to keep private because we are under attack.
Got it.
And sometimes sharing information with the opposition, whether it's with the protesters or with the Secret Service, just give them information they don't need that could be used against us. So we don't answer some questions.
Got it. Got it. Makes sense. I understand that. Yeah. And are you getting enough food? I saw one article that they hoisted it up through the window. Are you all having enough there to eat?
Well, there are challenges with getting food in, but we've had some breakthroughs, and we have a stockpile of food. Just had another moment today, by the way, where an Amazon delivery person was bringing two bags of food. They attempted to deliver it. The opposition blocked that from happening. One of our supporters, the Embassy Protection Collective outside the embassy, took the two bags, and we were able to throw a bag out with a rope past the police lines into the street. They were able to fill the bag up, and we pulled a bag of food up doing that. The opposition then came out and tried to surround that. About an hour later, we were able to do it again. You can see videos of this, by the way, on the Embassy Protection Collective Facebook page. We did so twice today. We got two bags of food in, but we have stockpiled the food. We have a good supply of food. We're not in any urgent need, but we are being very careful with our food. We're restricting our intake of food to two meals a day, and we will restrict it further if we need to. But we've had those pulling up by ropes are two of several breakthroughs that we've had that have provided, made sure that we have enough food to continue to reside here. And we are living here as tenants. That's one of the things that applies here. Essentially, the Venezuelan government is our landlord. The foreign ministry is our landlord. And we have tenancy rights. So if the government would try to evict us, they need to go through the eviction proceedings that provide protection to tenants in Washington, D.C. So we have food. We're here lawfully. We have a plan for when we would leave. We are able to work here. People are able to do their other jobs. If they need to do work here, they can. We have internet. We're able to write about this. We're getting more and more people outside showing their support every day from 4 to 7. People are coming to participate in the outside Embassy Protection Collective and join us. We do chants together. We sometimes play music and dance together with our allies across the street. So we are feeling strong, we're feeling confident, and we are going to have the fortitude to carry this out.
Is the building surrounded all 24/7 with the opposition?
Yeah, sometimes more than less people. There have been less through the night now, but they do, the Secret Service has amazingly let them set tents up on three sides of the building, which the other side is on a canal. And so that has been an amazing violation of the Vienna Convention. There's no other embassy in Washington, D.C. where the Secret Service would allow tents and signs to be put on an embassy. Those people would be arrested and all that would be removed immediately. But they're allowing that here because they have no choice. John Bolton and Elliot Abrams and Mike Pompeo, they know they cannot legally come in here, so they have to somehow frighten us or starve us out. As I said, that's not working, but that's their plan.
And I was looking through all the major media today, papers, several of them, to try and see if anyone's reporting on your being in the embassy and what's going on there. And I don't see it anywhere in the mainstream media. Maybe I'm missing it, but
this is a unique event in U.S. history for U.S. citizens to be in a foreign embassy protecting it from a U.S. coup and an illegal intervention by the federal government. That is a unique event in U.S. history.
I would say so, yeah.
And all the news that's fit to print doesn't think it's news. It's just a bizarre, obviously intentional decision. I suspect it's an intentional decision directed by the government telling these outlets not to report on this issue, because they know if they report on it and people start to debate the reality of Venezuela, that the facts are on our side.
Right.
And if the facts come out, our support will grow, and people will see these people outside, these pro-coup supporters, to be what they are. These are the more wealthy people in Venezuela, the people from who exiles from Cuba and Nicaragua who fought against those efforts of independence against the U.S., and people who profit from Venezuela. That's who's out here. And they're also violent, racist, misogynist people. Our black collective members they do ape signs against them. They show them bananas. Women are threatened with rape. We're all threatened with assault. These are people that, if the public saw them, they would be repulsed by them. This is like being surrounded by the KKK.
Are you taking photos of all of them? I hope you are.
Oh, there's a lot of... We have two embedded media with us. Anna Parampal from the Gray Zone Project has been putting out tweets of the violence, of these attacks. So it's all out there and very well documented. And we've also documented that with the Secret Service and with the State Department. We've been sending letters describing all these incidents. We've been writing about it. The most recent Popular Resistance newsletter, which you can see on popularresistance.org, under the newsletter box, the most recent newsletter is about the experiences we've had living in this embassy and the kinds of attacks we're getting from this violent and vile opposition.
That's really pretty frightening. So tell me, the media in general, in their coverage of what's been happening with Venezuela, aside from them not covering what you're doing there at all, how have they been handling Venezuela in general?
Well, in my two visits to Venezuela, it's become obvious that we're being told the opposite of the truth. It's not just a shading of the truth, it's the opposite of the truth. You know, it starts out with Venezuela. Maduro is a dictator. I've already talked about how he was actually elected in a very legitimate democratic election. He is not a dictator. He's a democratically elected and recognized president. And when we were in Venezuela last time, it became very stark in multiple ways. One way was when it was near our end of our visit, American Airlines canceled all the flights. They canceled the flights because they said it was unsafe for pilots, that there was widespread civil unrest in Venezuela, and that people from the United States could be arrested at any time for no reason. We went out that day and filmed what was actually happening in Caracas. We went to multiple neighborhoods, and we saw no violence, no civil unrest, no arrest. It was a total fabrication in order to create this image that the United States wants to put out that would be an image that would justify U.S. intervention. So total falsehood, complete lie. When we arrived in Venezuela, we arrived during the electric blackout. It became known while we were there that the blackout came because of a U.S. cyber attack. Coming out of Houston and out of Chicago was an ongoing attack. As the Venezuelans put the electricity back on, the U.S. would attack again. What we saw in Venezuela, though, was no looting, no rioting, no stealing, people not taking advantage of the blackout. Despite the economic war, people were not taking advantage of the blackout. It was a very civil society. People were coming to each other's aid. Water pumps stopped working because they needed electricity, so they had to walk a long distance to fill buckets up with water and bring those back and share them with their neighbors. It was really incredible to see how the community worked together, which is the opposite of what you'd expect. The third thing that was the opposite of what we were told is this so-called humanitarian crisis. In fact, Venezuela has a food distribution program that supplants the food that can be bought, and there's lots of food to be bought. The problem is pricing. I can talk about how that's a problem later, but the CLAP program, which is the food distribution program, provides a box of food to 6 million homes. That's to 24 million people every month. There's a population of 30 million in Venezuela, and 24 million are able to take product from the CLAP program. They purchase a box for 15 cents. It includes flour, sugar, salt, pastas, cleaning equipment, everything you need for a kitchen. And so people are not going hungry. And so there's a very strong program to prevent poverty. In the United States, we have 41 million people going to bed hungry every night. Venezuela has reduced its poverty since the pre-Chavez era and now provides these food distribution boxes. They've also built 2.5 million homes in the last few years for the poorest people. They give to the poorest people in the country. So we could not find any homelessness. We searched for homelessness. People went out. In fact, some people drove to the airport the night that American Airlines canceled their flights at 4 or 5 in the morning and could not find any homeless people. We looked around for them. We couldn't find homeless people. I see homeless people on every drive I take in Baltimore where I live. They're widespread. We have thousands of homeless people in every city in the United States. So what we're hearing about this humanitarian crisis is a total falsehood. The government distributes hundreds of tons of food a month. And so when the U.S. was offering 60 million tons of food at the Colombian border, that this phony humanitarian crisis was really an effort to create a way to bring arms into Venezuela by the United States. It was an absurd program. It was an unnecessary program, and it was really a charade, not really a humanitarian effort, but really an effort to create civil war.
Wow, yeah. And now Secretary of State Pompeo is actually threatening military intervention in Venezuela. Aside from being illegal under international law, and even our own Congress hasn't approved of it, which I believe is their responsibility if they decide to do this, isn't it a bit reckless in terms of, aren't the Russians and Chinese kind of pushing back, telling us to not do this? And that they...
it's reckless for many reasons. First of all, Pompeo's crazy. He's saying it's legal for the U.S. to attack Venezuela under international law. There's only two ways you can have a legal attack. One, if your country is attacked, you can respond. Two, if the Security Council agrees that military action is necessary. Every other military action is illegal. So Pompeo saying it'd be legal is patently false. And it would be reckless for a lot of reasons. First off, Venezuela has heard from President Trump since 2017 that the military attack is on the table. And they have been preparing for that attack since that time. They have a military of 200,000 troops. They have a National Guard and a police agency. In addition, they have been creating a popular militia, civilian militias, more than 2 million people armed and trained to protect their homeland. That's larger than the U.S. military. In addition to that, they put in place anti-missile defense systems, so the U.S. would not have air domination. It's a very sophisticated system, and any aerial attack they could respond to with this anti-missile defense system. Beyond that, you mentioned China and Russia. Russia has sent 100 intelligence officers to Venezuela, as well as a general, and they have told the U.S. government not to enter militarily. They've warned that it would be a mistake for the U.S. to do that. China is participating with the oil industry in Venezuela, so if the U.S. steals the oil industry, they'll be stealing from China as well as from Russia, as well as from Venezuela. And so any kind of military attack on Venezuela would be very difficult. Venezuela is twice as big as Iraq. It's not a desert. It's mountainous. It's got trees. It's got air defense, and it's got ground troops. It would be a quagmire for the United States that would cost trillions of dollars and end in failure. It would be destructive for Venezuela, no doubt, but it would also be destructive for the Latin American countries nearby Venezuela, including their U.S. allies, Colombia and Brazil, which neither one has very strong governments. And if they get into a military quagmire with Venezuela, you'd see those governments probably thrown out of office. And so a military attack is absurd. I've seen recently that the Bolton crew has been in the Pentagon trying to force the Pentagon to come up with military plans, and that usually has ended, one article talked about this week how it ended with an admiral slamming his fist on the table and leaving as Bolton was pushing for war. it would be a terrible mistake. It would be one more mistake that would be leading to the end of U.S. empire. The U.S. can only make so many mistakes. We've spent more than $7 trillion in the Middle East since 9/11 for a series of failed and destructive wars. We don't want to see the same thing happening in Venezuela and Latin America generally. It would be a disaster for the United States and a disaster for our hemisphere.
Yeah, and I really applaud you and all the people that are with you there in the embassy doing that. I mean, that's a people power at its best. I really appreciate that. How can people support you?
Well, we have on popularresistance.org in the slider at the top of the page an article about this collective. And in that article, we talk about various things that people can do to support us. One thing is there's a declaration of the Embassy Protection Collective, which we link to in that article. Please sign it. It describes why we're doing this, describes the election of President Maduro and why it was legitimate, describes the Juan Guaido self-appointment and how it violated the Venezuelan Constitution in multiple ways, and describes the Vienna Convention and requirements under that for the U.S. to protect this embassy. Please read it. I think you'll get a lot out of it, and you can share it with people so that you can educate more people. And then also sign it. If you have an organization, please get that organization to sign it. We already have 1,500 people and organizations who've signed on. We're going to be making it public in the next few days, so it'd be great if people sign on to that and show their support. Second, we talk about contacting your member of Congress. Let them know this is going on, that there are U.S. citizens seeking to stop a coup, and that they should be protected by the White House, not allowed to be attacked the way they are. Third, this is costing money to feed dozens of people every day, and so we would like to have, and other costs as well, so the support of people would make a great difference. We'd love to have people, if they can, come to the embassy every day from 4 to 7. Our supporters are holding rallies outside the embassy to show that they're supportive of this collective, and we're starting to call that the Embassy Protection Collective outside the embassy. So we have an inside and outside embassy. We do chants together. We play music together. We show our support for the Venezuelan people together. So those are some of the things you can do.
Okay.
Please check that article on the slider on popularresistance.org at the top of the page.
Okay, great. I will repeat that again later also. But Kevin, how long do you anticipate being there? This negotiation between the U.S. and Venezuela to protect both of their embassies, do you see that coming up with anything soon? Or?
Well, we came on April 10th, so we're approaching the 30-day mark, which would be May 10th. Just a few days away. And we've heard from the foreign minister that they are working on that negotiation. It's coming near completion. Then we have to get the U.S. and Venezuela to agree mutually so the U.S. embassy is protected and the Venezuela's embassy is protected. We hope that we can build enough public opinion and public support to put pressure on the administration to do the right thing and to allow that. So we could be a week, 2 weeks away, or we could be months away. We don't know the answer to the question, but we are preparing for the long haul. And so we are stockpiling food. People are doing their best to arrange their schedules so they can be here. And it will stay as long as it takes. We hope that it reaches fruitful conclusion. We don't want to see happen this embassy taken by the United States and then Venezuela do the same thing in Caracas, because we could easily imagine the U.S. declaring that an act of war and using that as an excuse for military attack, starting a war with Venezuela. That could lead over very largely, as you mentioned, Russia and China are involved in Venezuela. And the region could be put into chaos. So this battle for the embassy is much more than just about the embassy. It's really about preventing a war and finding a way to a fruitful, positive relationship between the U.S. and Venezuela. Put aside the lies, start telling the truth, and start to find ways to work together for the benefit of both countries.
Well, Kevin Zeese, thank you very much for being there. Please thank all the people you're with in and out that I really appreciate, and I'm not alone, I know, in supporting you and what you do. Thank you again.
Well, thanks a lot for giving me time to talk about this and share this with your listeners. We really want to get the word out, and I hope the most important thing people can do, really, I didn't mention, is to be the media. As you mentioned, the New York Times is not covering this, neither is the cable and commercial media outlets. And so we need people to be media. Go to Popular Resistance. You can sign up for our daily digest. You'll get a mailing every morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time, 15 or so articles, a paragraph each. Find articles you like and share them widely. We have to be the media. We can dominate the narrative. If we work together, we can be the media that controls the story. So please, as your first task, be the media. Help us put up the narrative of the truth about this situation so we can avert a war and find a path to peace.
Great. Thank you. Stay safe.
All right. Thank you very much.
You were just listening to an interview with Kevin Zeese, currently legally inside the Venezuelan embassy in Washington, D.C., with the Embassy Protection Collective, protecting the embassy from an illegal takeover by supporters of Juan Guaido. To learn more, go to the website popularresistance.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening. And the second part of the interview with economist Jack Rasmus will air next week.